What's that smell?
That's no smell, Joe. That's just good old Crab Bait Radio, Episode 5, Return of the Bear Die. Crab Bait Radio, where our slogan is, if it ain't news, it's crab bait. I'm Joe Vignicki.
And I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Coming up in this year's Bait Can,
the city council makes a splash.
Getting out the cut, derby style.
From slow ferries to fast game trails, we'll hear about the new Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan.
Anti-ungulate immigration.
And an ancient scroll may answer the age-old question of king salmon allocation.
Those stories and a bunch of freezer burn humpies coming up on Crab Bait Radio, Episode 5, Return of the Bear Die. But first, this news.
Local police say last night vandals broke into the site where the IFA ferry Stikeen docks, and strangely enough seem to have constructed a ferry terminal. DOT managers say a ferry terminal is no longer in the plans for South Mitkoff, and the illegal terminal will be dismantled.
Due to poor recruitment in the Southeast Red King crab fishery, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has announced that it is lowering its recruitment standards. Management biologist Rusty Crustacean says they hope to encourage more crab to enlist in the red crab ranks.
Well, the crabs will no longer have to pass the rigorous physical fitness test we once required. That should make it easier for the middle-aged crabs to join up. Also, we're welcoming a number of other species into the Red King crab family.
The list of acceptable species is wide-ranging. Hermit crabs, oval spider crabs, tooth shore crabs, horseshoe crab, Korean hair crab, striated squat lobster, and humpback whales will all now be considered Red King crab.
This late-breaking news, Crab Bait Radio has confirmed that the city's $19 million project to renovate cigarette butt cans on the sidewalk on Main Street has been put on hold. Crab Bait Radio checked in with project manager Ned Ryerson earlier today.
Your project is important to us. Please continue to hold. Funding will be provided as soon as it is available. Your project is important to us. Thank you.
It's been like this for weeks, but I'll keep holding. If this project's worth doing, it's worth doing right, and for the right amount.
City officials say the project could be on hold for another 3 to 4 weeks.
Two juvenile male eagles were released back into the wild after a six-week stint in the Alaska Raptor Rehabilitation Center. The eagles had been ordered to rehab after their arrest last year for knocking out power to the city of Petersburg. Raptor rehabilitator Arthur Beekman says there's been a growing problem with juvenile delinquent eagles.
Well, they get drunk on the fermented cannery scraps, then they go out and they dare each other to fly as close as they can to the power lines without getting shocked. It's really a recipe for disaster, especially on Thanksgiving. Everyone's trying to cook a different kind of bird.
Unfortunately, these two juveniles were last seen headed right back to the outfall pipe.
Petersburg resident Virgil Sandusky has announced he's decided to den up for the winter. Sandusky has been preparing a den for the past month in the back of his Chevy Suburban, collecting bits of quilt and leftover Halloween costumes. Sandusky says the bears have the right idea about taking a long winter's nap.
Well, I couldn't afford to go on vacation this year, so this way I'll sleep right through the holidays, and no one has to buy me a present for Christmas, and no one will have to see my cranky face around town until March. Okay?
Other local residents today applauded Sandusky's decision and helped complete his new den 2 weeks ahead of schedule.
And now we bring you a live update from the Department of Homely Insecurity. Joe, what do you have for us from down there?
I'm here with Melvin Brusselsprout, the top-ranking regional official for the Department of Homely Insecurity.
Excuse me, I'm not really the top-ranking regional guy.
What's that, Melvin?
I am the head of the regional office, but I've only been working here a couple of years, and I wouldn't say I'm an expert or anything.
Well, very good, Melvin. Let's talk about the current level of Homely Insecurity. Where are we? Are we at the level yellow?
You don't like yellow? I thought about orange, but it didn't go with my shirt. Should we go to orange? I could go to orange if that's what you wanted. Just tell me what you want.
Well, Melvin, I'm a little confused. Aren't those things decided by the actual perceived threats or intercepted conversations or something like that?
This is not what I thought the interview was about. Why are you going after me like this? Was it something I said? This is like a...
Okay, thanks, Melvin. Back to you.
News of a spinach recall came too late for America's favorite cartoon mariner earlier last month. Popeye the Sailor Man never heard word when he poured a can of the leafy green stuff down his gullet.
I bite through the finish when I eat my spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
After a short stay in the hospital, the sailor man announced he'd no longer use spinach to gain amazing strength. Instead, he switched to organic arugula.
Crabbait Radio is brought to you by Homely Insecurity Level Orange. Level Orange, mildly alert and somewhat edgy since 2001.
The Petersburg City Council has made a radical departure from business as usual. Councilors this week voted unanimously to hold their meetings in the new Aquatic Center. Senior pool reporter Matt Lichtenstein has the story.
The adoption of the consent agenda is presented.
With its leaky ceiling, poor acoustics, and squeaky chairs, the council chambers has lost much of its charm for Petersburg's leading politicians. While a proposed community center might provide the council with a new home someday, it wasn't soon enough for Councillor Bill Tremblay, who this past week departed from the usual agenda with an unusual motion.
I move that we move this meeting to the new warm water pool.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
I call first on the water slide.
The other councillors must have been prepared for this. Without hesitation, they proceeded to strip down to their Speedo bathing suits, leapt from their seats, and raced downtown. It became a sort of free-for-all as the city councillors ran along Main Street dressed only in their bathing suits and sneakers, jockeying for first place and for the first trip down the water slide. With his experience as a Klondike relay runner, it was not a big surprise that city manager Bruce Jones pulled ahead of all of the councillors and was the first one up Dolphin Street. Barely winded, he gave his weekly report on the way.
At that time, the department has amended the initial amount of grant funding for this project with two more appropriations.
Then it was into the pool for everyone. There was already a group of elementary schoolers in the warm water pool, and the school board had decided to meet there too. The city councilors were thrilled to be there, but a little frustrated by the long line for the water slide.
It's nice if we can use it.
After a few trips down the slide, city manager Jones and Parks and Recreation Director Ryan McFarlane were thrilled to see the city councilors were having fun.
You know, the water slide will keep them coming no matter what. So
I'm pretty excited about it. When you look at the faces of these and see how excited they are to have this thing open, it was well worth it.
Soon the councilors moved on to new business. From his seat in the jacuzzi, the mayor began to give an update on another pool.
But it's indirect because you're the ratepayers that pay the four damn pool, and that money that, if we spend that money.
But this seemed to bore the other councilors, most of whom began splashing each other or wandering around with their eyes closed. They seemed to be searching for something. And then it was off to the main pool where the councilors raced against the clock until adjournment. Petersburg swim coach was pleased with their performance.
Two of those little guys didn't have to wear their water wings this week, and the other two, they went into the deep end of the pool without hurting anybody. So I'm really happy. 100% best times all around, and only one got stuck in the sauna this week.
Next week, we'll report on some local toddlers who helped put the warm in the warm water pool. With the city council at the Aquatic Center,
any further discussion? Vote on roll.
I'm senior pool correspondent Matt Lichtenstein.
Yes.
Tremblay?
Yes.
Duval?
Yes.
Hickman?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Cannibal!
Crabbait Radio is brought to you in part by Bob Kraske's Subaru, in the front yard on blocks and pissing off the neighbors since 1996. Bob Kraske's Subaru, make me an offer. And by Virgil Sandusky. Virgil Sandusky, please don't wake me until March or April.
While the day of the Derby-style fishery opening is for the most part long gone in southeast Alaska, it may be an idea whose time has come for a different industry in the region. Forest managers have been seeking ways to revitalize the timber industry, and they've started holding Derby-style timber openings. One such opening was held earlier this week on a spur road off of Fruit Loop Road, and Crabbait Radio reporter Joe Vignicki was there.
2006 Non-Tension Cellulose American Recovery Program is now open. 2006 Non-Tension Cellulose American Recovery Program is now open.
Get away from me, you goddamn.
How's the derby harvest going so far, sir?
Ah, it's all right. I mean, all the good trees are across the road, but the commercial guys can't cut there, only the personal use loggers. Hey, I gotta go. Some of our spotter planes have sighted a big clump of cedar right up almost by the beach, and they're getting away.
Okay, thanks for your time. Let's see if one of the forestry managers has a moment. Excuse me, sir, how's it going so far?
Harvest rates are good. The size of the trees aren't bad, but we're still competing with farm trees from Chile. We've even had some of our loggers find escaped Penrays poplar trees from British Columbia. We're just about to close up here.
Hey, you're over the line. Get back inside.
The 2006 Central Midcoff Non-Sentient Cellulose American Recovery Program is now closed. 2006 Central Midcoff Non-Sentient Cellulose American Recovery Program is now closed. Hey, shut her down. We're done.
It looks like about 50 million board feet of timber came down in this opening. That's just a quick eyeball estimate, but we won't know for a few days. The overall season guideline harvest level is just over 287 million board feet. Make that 51.5 million board feet. Loggers will have several days off to haul off the trees, and the next opening could be sometime early next week. For Crabbait Radio, reporting off Fruit Loop Road, I'm Joe Vicnicki. Crabbait Radio, unable to tell a spruce from a hemlock since at least 1998.
There's been a growing number of male deer moving into the city limits of Petersburg, and it's become a big concern for the male deer that already live here. Petersburg resident male deer have formed a new coalition called The Buck Stops Here. They are proposing a series of anti-ungulate immigration ordinances. Opponents of the restrictions say the Buck Stop Here's members are just selfish and want to keep Petersburg all to themselves. Joe Vicnicki recently spoke with representatives from both sides.
Now, you are the president of the Buck Stops Here, Mr. Bambi, is it?
That's Bam. The I is silent. Get it? You want me to call you Joey? You like that? It's Bam, not Bambi.
All right, Mr. Bam. So your group is opposing any more male deer in town. Please explain why.
Well, Joe, it's pretty simple. We know we got it good here. There's all the forage we can eat, plus the carrots and apples and other goodies people leave on their front lawns. Then there's the safety factor. I mean, one step outside city limits and blammo!
And you wouldn't want any competition for our attention, would you? You just want more does for your harem. Oh, sexist pig!
Hey, babe, no pork here. I'm all venison.
And you are Miss Faline? Am I pronouncing that right?
That's Ms. Faline. Anyway, I used to date this jerk way back when, but I couldn't stand his politics. Now, I'm the chair of Ungulates for Foreign Deer Acceptance.
UFDA.
Something wrong?
No, UFDA, the acronym for your pro-deer immigration group.
Well, actually, it's HUFDA, Hungry Point Ungulates for Foreign Deer Acceptance.
Wouldn't that be HUPUFDA?
No, our P is silent. Anyway, our group welcomes newcomers to the fine forage and safe haven of Petersburg. It's so peaceful here. And the apples. They're all over the lawns, waiting to be plucked right off the ground.
What was that?
Car backfire. As I was saying, HUFDA is staunchly opposed to the exclusionary policies of the Buck Stops Here and their ilk.
They've got elk in their group, too?
No, ilk.
Oh, look, let me make this clear. We don't have any problem with more does coming to town. It's the bucks we're worried about. Too many bucks, and you people, Joe, you people are going to start deciding to hunt us in city limits.
Oh, you're just trying to save your own hide. Personally, I think this town could use a few more bucks. Oh, look there. There's one of the new boys right outside the window. Eugene! Oh, Eugene! Oh, now he's got a nice rack.
There you go again, Faline, fawning all over these newcomers. You see, Joe, the problem with too many bucks is that they compete for our food, our females, and our jobs.
Deer have jobs in Petersburg?
Yeah, we have jobs. What do you think? We're deadbeats? A lot of us are professional actors.
What, in wildlife documentaries?
No, stag films.
Well, that's all the time we have for now. Tune in next week when we speak with the chair of the King Crab Task Force, Ronald Red Crab. Red Crab is known as the David Copperfield of crustaceans, and he's taught thousands of other crabs his techniques for disappearing from Fish and Game survey pots. For Crab Bait Radio, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Sea of Southeast Alaska, two men shared summer aboard a wooden double-ender.
If you're looking for work, I suggest you get in here pronto.
One was a salty old troller with chronic back pain.
Oh, my damn back.
The other was a greenhorn deckhand from South Dakota with problems of his own.
Lousy pull tabs.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
One slept in the forecastle, the other in the wheelhouse. They were together only in dreams until one day, their dreams collided.
Let go of the gaff, you moron.
But Skip, I'm just trying to help.
I said give me that. Oh, my back. Can you give me a hand here?
Aye, aye, Skipper.
Oh, that's a little better. Hey, that feels pretty good. How about a little lower?
It was the start of a forbidden friendship.
You don't go up there and fish.
Between a gambling greenhorn and a broke-back troller.
Well, since we're going to be working together, I reckon it's time we start drinking yet.
Brokeback Troller, coming soon to a theater near you.
You gonna do this again next summer?
Crabbait Radio, a barnacle stuck to the side of KFSK since 2000.
The age-old allocation battle over king salmon may actually be a lot older than was once thought. While cleaning up a fuel spill beneath the Forest Service's new supervisor's office in Scow Bay recently, workers uncovered a cache of cedar bark documents. These 2,000-year-old papers have come to be known as the Scow Bay Scrolls. Archaeologists say their narrative seems to solve many questions facing contemporary fishery managers. Crabbait Radio's Matt Lichtenstein has the story.
Archaeologists, anthropologists, ichthyologists, and even philatelists were all stunned by the find of the Scow Bay Scrolls. They say these ancient texts seem to lay out a king salmon management plan that dates back to biblical times. Actor James Earl Jones recently gave this dramatic reading of the Scow Bay Scrolls at a Board of Fisheries meeting.
And on the eighth day the Lord created the fishermen. Behold, saith the Lord, those who drift with their nets upon the sea shall be known as seiners and gill netters, and those that trail their hoochies beneath the waves shall henceforth be called trollers. And all these fishermen shall go forth, multiply, and set their gear upon the water.
So far, archaeologists have only recovered a small portion of these scrolls, since removing the delicate artifacts from the muskeg is an exacting process. Standing in a deep pit far below the Forest Service Supervisor's office in Scow Bay, Dr. Iliamna Smith brushes some sphagnum off a newly uncovered portion of the scroll.
Oh, look at this. This is unbelievable. I mean, it reads like a Fish and Game press release. Okay, it's a little faded. Wait, I think I can decipher it. Lo, and the troller may follow the gill netter to the cove known as Woodpecker. But upon the fourth day, troller and gill netter both shall lay down their gear together and rest. Oh, let's see. If the troller or the gill netter or even the great seiner disobey these commandments, they shall be set upon and cleaved asunder by the blue-tunicked guardian of the fishes.
For Recovering such artifacts can be a dangerous business. As we all know, most excavation sites are rife with ingenious booby traps, deadly reptiles, and of course, treacherous French archaeologists who'll stop at nothing to steal these secrets.
Whatever are you doing in such a nasty place?
Why don't you come on down here and I'll show you?
Thank you, my friend, but I think we are all very comfortable up here. That's right, isn't it? Yes, we are very comfortable up here. So once again, what was briefly yours is now mine. You're about to become a permanent addition to this archaeological find.
The Scow Bay Scrolls are proving to be controversial as they lay out a series of commandments that would seem to favor Alaskan fishermen above all others. Take this passage, for instance, as dramatized by actor Joe Pesci.
And concerning the loaves and the fishes brought forth from the sea, the Alaskans may keep the multitude of the fish that come forth into their waters. Those of the other lands shall not take of Alaska's bounty. As far as the loaves go, they can sleep with the fishes for all I care. And that last part, I just added that myself. Think that's funny? You think I'm funny? Think I'm some kind of a clown over here?
Cue the sound effects. Cue the sound effects. As more and more of the Scow Bay Scrolls are excavated, scientists are uncovering some other amazing insights. For instance, the menu at the Last Supper apparently included wild Alaska salmon. Also, in addition to being a carpenter, Jesus really was a gillnetter, although he also apparently fished for Sitka Sound herring, gooey ducks, and ran a small dingle bar operation for cod. For Crabbait Radio, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Crabbait Radio is brought to you by that burned-out shell of a car on Woodpecker Cove Road. Open for business most days after 3 p.m.
Crabbait Radio, the escape mechanism for you is the off button on your stereo.
Following last year's hurricanes on the Gulf Coast, forest fires in the west, and heat wave in the northeast, many in Congress blamed Mother Nature as the worst terrorist the country has seen. It turns out Mother Nature is indeed a terrorist, and she's holed up in the mountainous country somewhere on the southern end of Baranoff Island. A special operations unit of the National Weather Service has been dispatched to that area in an attempt to hunt down and kill Mother Nature this fall. But as Crabbait Radio's Joe Vignicki reports, her attacks continue on the people of southeast Alaska.
The onslaught continues today. Gale force winds and 3 inches of rain have rocked the region. Mudslides, flooding, and trees falling. It seems like this latest attack on Mother Nature has only made her angrier. The rain has been falling steadily for the past 3 to 4 months, but it's the wind that's really picked up in the past hour or two. As you can hear, those flags over there on the flagpoles are straight out, and nearby trees are bent over nearly double. Meanwhile, the water level continues to rise, and wait a second here, I'm going to go over and taste it. Yes, it's salt water. It must be that ocean levels are rising.
Joe, that's just the tide coming in. There's actually a high tide in about a half an hour.
Put the tide book aside, Matt. I can't go fishing with you. I've got a report here to do. Meteorologists have established a command center just outside Little Port Walter. And they're running daily sorties up onto the steep mountainsides, but so far have not been able to uncover the lair of this criminal mastermind. Meteorologist in charge, Wendy North, says Mother Nature is a difficult enemy to fight.
We put out 2 small boats to head up the coastline in an effort to outflank her, but the seas kicked up out of the north, 60-knot winds. It uprooted tree branches, and they were flying all through the air. We sustained heavy casualties. I don't know how much longer we can keep this up.
The other meteorologists we've talked to say Mother Nature is also very mobile, causing problems around the globe, not just here in Southeast. As soon as you've got a forest fire cleaned up in California, there's an earthquake in the South Pacific. Defense consultant Wayward Missile says the National Weather Service is going to need a bigger budget to combat this kind of an enemy.
We need to give our meteorologists the tools so they can hunt down and kill Mother Nature once and for all. We've got to build levees everywhere, anti-wind machines, giant earthquake deadening blankets. We're going to have to pump particles into the atmosphere to slow down the global warming. If we can't wipe Mother Nature off the face of the earth, let's at least make her uncomfortable.
Government officials are also stepping up political pressure on the city and borough of Sitka, which may be harboring this dangerous terrorist somewhere in the mountainous area of Baranoff Island. Reporting for Crabbait Radio from Southern Baranoff, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Nice to fool Mother Nature.
If you think it's butter, but it's not, it's chiffon.
Crabbait Radio. I swear, officer, I thought the season was closed tomorrow. The year is 2075. Southeast Alaska is only a shadow of its former self. Only one village stands as a lone outpost against the surrounding wasteland. In the center of it all, the ruins of a community cold storage now serves as the home of the gladiator. It's a place where the brutal thrive and only the strong survive. It's known as Burrow Dome.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Burrow Time's here. You all know the rules of Burrow Dome. Two municipalities enter, one municipality leaves. Two municipalities enter, one municipality leaves. And you know why we're here. Half a century ago, the great Southeast Alaska pink salmon shortage sent our world spiraling into decay. But with Petersburg's never-ending supply of canned humpies and humpy-based biodiesel gasoline, the citizens of Petersburg rule the region. A few small bands of outlanders cling together in reinforced enclaves in the hopes of resisting assimilation into our magnificent Petersburg collective. One of those outlanders stands before you today. This so-called King of Keen Channel has challenged Petersburg's all-powerful and beneficent leader, the Duke of Doihoff.
You do it my way. My fear is our ally. The gasoline will be ours.
They will settle their differences here. The Burrow. Where there's only one rule. Two municipalities enter, one municipality leaves.
Spin the fish wheel, Raggedy Man.
Two municipalities enter, one municipality leaves.
Crabbait Radio. If you can't handle the truth, then listen to us. Officials with the State Department of Transportation say their plan for transportation in the region is evolving. While Petersburg was once touted as the hub of a proposed regional system of roads and ferries, it seems the plans have changed for the roads, ferry terminals, and fast ferries that were once planned to serve Mitkoff Island. Crabbait Radio's Joe Vicnicki spoke with DOT bigwig Hugo Pothole for an update on the Southeast Transportation Plan.
For many years, Petersburg was talked about as the hub of the Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan. Has that changed?
Well, I think the best way to explain it is, yes. Petersburg is no longer going to be the hub with the decision to not run the fast ferries. Instead, Petersburg is going to be more like a, maybe a spoke on the wheel, the giant wheel of Southeast transportation, and, or actually, maybe not quite a spoke even, but if you push that a little, that idea a little further, more like a one of the studs that holds the tire together. It's a key component, but not everything touches. Well, especially if it's one of the studs that fell off when you were trying to change the tire, and now it's just sitting by the side of the road with nothing. So really, it's a positive thing, because Petersburg's more of a stud than a hub.
Now, give me the overall picture. How's it going to work? A traveler comes up from down south and gets on the ferry system. Tell me how they're going to work their way through Southeast.
Well, our plan depends on a series of transportation corridors and links, as you would. Anyone who's been hunting in Southeast, Joe, knows that there's many different routes you can choose. If you walk through the forest, you can see that the wonderful plentiful game we have, deers and martens and bears, seem to choose various routes through the forest, and you can follow any of these trails. Well, we are applying that same principle to the Marine Highway System. You get dropped off at certain points, and then you simply will have signs pointing different options for game trails that you can take, and eventually that will lead, hopefully, to one of the other terminals, in which case you can then jump on another ferry within the next 3 or 4 days and make it to the next game trail.
Which I would imagine would be good for, say, hunting opportunities.
Oh, excellent, excellent hunting opportunities. We're thinking that we'd suggest people bring rifles or bows with them, and that way, on their way between points on land, they could shoot something and then take it on the ferry.
Are you afraid of losing passengers on the ferry system while they are walking across the islands of Southeast Alaska?
Well, that's the beauty of the system, Joe, because the passengers pay for the ferry tickets. But if they don't show up, we don't have to provide that service, so hopefully we'll lose most of them, and then we won't have to run the ferry quite as often.
With the decision not to go with the fast ferries in Southeast Alaska, at least in Petersburg, are there ideas for using the fast ferries in a different capacity?
Well, yes, we've had several ideas offered up, and we have thought about having a contest and having the school children of Alaska decide what the ferry should be used for. One of the good ideas that we've heard so far is, Juneau's a town of government, and there's a lot of paperwork, and there's a lot of wind, and, wind and paper don't go well together, so we're thinking that perhaps we could use, during the winter time, when the wind really kicks up, you could use the fast ferries for giant paperweights. Or possibly paper shredders, sea lion shredders, log splitters, depending on how it's useful.
Crabbait Radio, like the mold you just found underneath your house, we're here to stay. And in the local forecast, the winds of change should blow about 30 to 40, but then die down for the rest of the week, with a generally gloomy outlook giving way to exuberant ambivalence. We have one crabbait message going out to mother and cub Black Bear on Ira 2 in Casino. Junior and I woke up the other day and found ourselves near Thomas Bay. We'll make for dry straits and try to be back by Thanksgiving. Save some garbage cans for us. That's from Bernice and Fuzzy. In the lost and found, lost candidates for the office of governor of the state of Alaska. Is there an election going on here or something? If found, please ask them to stop by, campaign, and elaborate on their political leanings.
Lost somewhere between Dixon Entrance and Cape Fairweather. 40,000 pink salmon. Very friendly. Answers to the name of Gorbusha. If found, please contact the Alaska Department of Fish and Game or any local seiner.
Also lost, two fast ferries, a road, and ferry terminal planned to service Petersburg and South Mitkoff Island. If found, please call Alaska Marine Highway Chief Robin Taylor. Also lost, Alaska Marine Highway Chief Robin Taylor. If found, please call the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. ¶¶
That's it for this year's edition of Crab Bait Radio. Crab Bait is defrosted and chopped in the studios of KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg, Alaska, by Joe Vignicki and me, Matt Lichtenstein. Additional thanks go out to Suzanne Fuqua, Tom Abbott, Joe Stratman, Scott Roberge, Bill Tremblay, and the City Council players, Popeye the Sailor, and the many other talented voices that took part in this year's show. Remember, if it ain't news, it's Crab Bait.